So we're really unpopular, not just unpopular, we're really unpopular. And what we're showing here is the equity capital markets and the availability of capital and where we sit in energy compared to the other sectors. So the gold bars are the total value of IPOs for the last 8 years. This goes back to 2013. And energy are the blue bars. So the peak year for energy was 2014, and that's $13.9 billion. And there were 29 IPOs that year. So far this year, there have been two for a whopping $1 billion. So a couple of things that we see, in addition to energy being completely unavailable, or close to completely unavailable, in either an initial offering or follow-on, follow-on and bonds are not really available either. Energy's out of favor. What we're seeing here that other sectors could speak to and my fellow panelists can talk to is the decrease in public capital that's available. That is coincident with the private equity dollars and all the money on the street, which is what everybody in our business wants to talk about.
So what you're saying is the public companies don't have access to cash because the markets are closed for them, so they can't enter into any transactions.
Correct.
But I would assume, Jeff, that creates a massive void for large private equity funds to raise capital and sweep in and buy assets at a discount.
Well, Holt, you know what happens when you assume. let's not sing too sad of a song. Yes, there is very substantial private equity money available for energy, but the halcyon days of more than $100 billion of private equity capital being available to make all kinds of transactions, that's probably not there so much, and that's due to a number of factors. I think that the amount of the investor appetite for energy private equity is undoubtedly down. That's due to a variety of factors, not the least of which is, number one, they see that public equities are not doing and not performing particularly well. And so it's a little hard to go to an investment committee and say, well, let's invest in energy private equity when all the public equities look so bad. Second, I think that many institutional investors' asset allocation towards energy, just like the way that the energy component of the S&P is down from 13% to 4%, I think that many institutional investors have a lower capacity for energy. Number three.
Meaning when they say, I'm going to invest $100, they previously were saying 20 of that goes to energy. Now I'm only going to invest 5 that to energy.
That's right. Say a third factor, and we shouldn't underestimate this, is the political headwinds towards energy and towards investing either in public equities or private equity funds themselves are not particularly good right now. For example, University of California has said that they're going to divest of all energy investments. You've got some other large state plans that are politically motivated, and they're the ultimate decision makers, have said we really want nothing to do with private equity that is focused on energy. Now, all that being said, there is still money available. We're fortunate enough at NGP to have raised the second largest fund in our history. There are a number of other funds that have had successful capital raises. There is a lot of money out there, and the truth is when we're selling companies to the extent that we're able to and to the extent that we find prices that we like, very often the potential bidders are other PE-funded portfolio companies.
Right. A couple other things I would add, Holt. First of all, energy and tech are probably two of the most capital-intensive industries out there, which is why, as M&A deal lawyers, energy has been a great place for us to help our clients develop really sophisticated products and complex transactions. We're going to talk about some of that. And the history of investing in energy is there are lots of complex structures because of the dollars that support it. And we say energy, as you probably figured out, we're basically talking about oil and gas. Energy also includes power and electricity and other things, but we're really focusing more on oil and gas today. But the other thing I would tell you is that among the other headwinds that Jeff and Carla have mentioned is the oil and gas game has changed a little bit too. In the past, you've probably all heard about the shale boom, and you've heard about, you know, the Chesapeakes and others who did these land grabs, and they went out there. And so a lot of people made a lot of money in a very quick time frame, which is kind of almost like a real estate boom in some scenario. And so historically, there have been a lot of funds that were able to raise new funds based on that thesis. Now that the business has changed and it's become much more, we know where the resources are, and it's more about can you do it better or smarter or more efficiently, I think what you're seeing too is a flight to quality. So when Jeff says NGP has raised one of the biggest funds ever, I think the investors are saying, if I'm going to be in energy, I want to be with the guys who know what they're doing and have done it successfully, and I'm no longer as eager to just place another energy bet. So I think those are all headwinds that are kind of impacting what we're doing and causing the M&A landscape to change. So, Jeff, I assume that's part of what you're hearing from your investors as well.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Well, Carl, there has to be some sort of, you hear about big deals that happen. What, there has to be something going on in the capital markets.
Well, there are a few. The trend that we've seen over the last couple of years has been a decrease in the number of assets, pure asset transactions, and an increase in corporate M&A. We had to rescale this graph because of the Oxy Anadarko deal that closed on August 8th. That was a $58 million deal. Sorry, million. That would have been a really good deal. Warren Buffett would have loved that. $58 billion deal.